Everybody to Popped Culture. I am Scott.
I'm Jason.
And I'm Monica.
And this episode we are reviewing a foreign film, which we don't get to do very often, it seems. We are talking about Godzilla Minus One. So I think, needless to say, I was a little bit excited for this movie.
You certainly were.
His inner child came out.
Mm-hmm. You guys just get me.
Yeah,
I think I kind of, from everything I had heard, I'm like, okay, it's going to be pretty good. And I was not disappointed. This might be one of the best Godzilla films, if I'm speaking just of Godzilla films.
For me, it's my favorite that I've seen now, out of all of them.
I don't have much of a yardstick.
Even better than 1954.
Even that.
I don't have much of a yardstick, but I loved this one. It's the best one that I've seen. I had so much fun with this film.
So it outranks Roland Emmerich's 1998 classic for
you then? Oh, you know, just by a hair.
Yeah.
Just. Just didn't have enough P. Diddy in the soundtrack, but, you know.
More Matthew Broderick.
The only person who asks for that is Matthew Broderick. Yeah, it got a real big rap leading up to it coming out here. I guess it had come out in other places before we got it. And it was refreshing, I guess, in a way that it's, I mean, apart from the original Godzilla film, a period piece. This is starts in 1945 and sort of finishes in 1947. Mm. I mean, the original film was 1954, so...
For me, it was just like an outstanding return to the essence of Godzilla. So when SBS started, they put these sorts of films on in the evening, and my first exposure to Godzilla was actually Godzilla versus King Kong, whenever that was filmed. It was looked like a teddy bear and
classic.
Absolutely. This film still sort of grabbed the essence of those early Godzilla films that seem to be missing from the American versions completely. And this sort of parable of indiscriminate destruction and the effects it takes on the people around it is suddenly brought back to the forefront of the film. And that's the part that I really appreciated. I mean, yeah, granted, Godzilla's a fun monster in terms of if you like your monsters, but that was what really impressed me was the fact that they brought it back down to earth and the effects of it.
They made him scary. They made him a big, monstrously unstoppable force of nature. And he really wasn't I guess even in the Japanese films, basically from the original film onward, really, he kind of became a little bit silly, and kind of an anti-hero-esque kind of quality to him. And it wasn't until I think Shin Godzilla, which was the previous Japanese film, which is also very, very good, made him monstrous again. But this film seemed to just like elevate it to a whole nother level of kind of like horror. He was horrifying.
He was a very terrifying monster, and I like that you see him straight away. Almost the first 10 minutes everyone sees the monster and he's terrifying, and
yeah, there
you
was
see
no
this...
like fanfare or build up. It was just like, bah!
Yeah, and that kind of took me by surprise. In a lot of movies, you can sort of understand that you don't always want to directly show the monster straight away, and that's something that I think the most previous Godzilla film that I saw with the Elizabeth Olsen, you didn't see much of the monster at all right until the very end, but I loved seeing him from the get-go. This is what he can do. He is this horrible, terrifying creature who is just indiscriminately destroying these poor survivors of war. And to have it framed against post-war Japan was just such a brilliant move. I loved it.
Culturally, like the first time, I think, I could be wrong. I'm sure other directors have been, you know, have tackled this, but I guess for a mainstream cinematic release of a monster movie to be like, oh yeah, the war, we did some pretty bad stuff, because culturally there was sort of a denial or a try to ignore what happened.
Yeah, well, that was the other layer on top of the original parable that it was about nuclear war and the effects on Japan from nuclear war. So before the more, how would you say, reflective aspect to what happened during the war. Yeah, it wasn't even a revision. There was actually, we're going to actually reflect and bring it to the surface. The parable of nuclear war and the devastation on the world around them, all these characters, was really, really brought forward by the characters themselves, how they seemed to wander around with PTSD. They had troubles even just connecting with each other because they were just so traumatized by what had happened. And then you add that layer of Godzilla coming back and doing more to them. It just makes it even more horrifying. So then you add the layer of, as you said, revealing how there was a cultural requirement for the kamikazes and how that was sort of considered the honorable thing at the time to do. But now reflecting on it, they're looking at how, you know, that wasn't exactly the nicest cultural aspect to it. So, yeah, that sort of reflection. I don't call it a revision, more than a reflection on what happened.
Yeah, I would largely agree. You have the character of Koichi who has this survivor's guilt with his freezing up, one, abandoning his kamikaze mission because he was, as in his words, commanded by his parents to live. And you just see him deal with all this inner turmoil and, again, not being able to assist his fellow survivors on Odo Island, and also surviving that. And he's just going through traumatic event through to traumatic event. Yeah, absolutely. And then trying to pull all the pieces back together. And what was, I guess, really interesting when I was watching this was also all the other characters, how they intermingle with one another. There's this government secrecy, which is sort of exemplified by the doctor character who was the weapons developer. And you also have the captain on the ship who is so distrustful of the government doing their job. It was almost, I guess, an allegory of how the world has sort of been coming out of the pandemic. In a lot of ways, people have become more distrustful and disenfranchised with those in power, that they have to do unto themselves the task of dispatching either an illness or doing what they can by their community. And that also includes, you know, trying to destroy a giant lizard monster.
And in that classic wacky Japanese way as well. I do love the fact that they kept that essential point where they do these really weird ways of tackling the problem, making him sink, float. Use pressure. No, now I'm going to float.
Which may be a big difference from it to the previous entry. Shin Godzilla, I don't know if you guys got to see that one or not. I do thoroughly recommend it. It is very much a sort of dealing with Godzilla in a similar way to this, in terms of it's sort of, but it's set in present day and it's about sort of the government bureaucracy, and that Japan only has a self-defense force, so we can't really deploy anything against this monster without kind of upsetting the Americans. And how do we, like, what do we do? We should just evacuate, I guess, and let it do what it needs to do. And hopefully it'll just go away. It's much more of this kind of political, you see this political side of how do you deal with a monster.
Yeah, especially
a very mature way of dealing with it, in a way I think American cinema is just like, look how cool it is, they're going to fight each other, it's going to be sick.
The American versions I equate to video games. You know, it's basically Street Fighter. between these two monsters,
it's this big sort of spectacle. Whereas the Japanese, especially of late, I think since the sort of, I think they're calling it the revisionist era or something. There's every era of Godzilla has its own name, and they've taken a very different approach in the last couple of years to how they're dealing with Godzilla. And I think in order to distance themselves from the American sort of representation of him, because he's now very popular in Western movies, you know, the American movies have done very, very well. Whereas, you know, before all they had to worry about was the 98 one, and who cares? So seeing him do well and be treated a little bit more seriously by, I think, Hollywood, they've tried to take unique and interesting spins on the character, and to great effect, because the last few have been amazing, and this one is just the icing on the cake. Like,
I feel that it was almost an almost literal dispensing of, I guess, the American Hollywood isms, because you have the Americans conducting these experiments, which causes Godzilla to have these immense powers of regeneration and his heat wave and everything like that. And they're immediately taken out of the picture with a throwaway line about the Soviet Red Scare. So it is all they're doing, and we're completely discarding them because it's not about them. This is about the Japanese. Right. And completely our experience of how we deal with monsters. Like, yes, they can't and they won't.
It also, the interesting part of it was, when you're talking about Hollywood and the treatment of the Godzilla films previously, this film actually made lots of nods to a lot of Hollywood films.
Yeah.
I was seeing bits of Jurassic Park in it. I was seeing Jaws in it. I was seeing King Kong. There was all of these nods to those films, and it actually... it made me smile. It wasn't one where I was going, oh, they're just ripping off these scenes. It was actually just this really nice, if you want, homage.
The Jaws references were just... had me like almost giggling with excitement. The chase in the boat and...
Yep.
I was giggling in excitement in a different way. Especially in the scene with the chase with the boat, and you see Godzilla with his eyes front on. That is the exact same look my parrot has when she's hungry. So,
actually, I want to talk about that. The face of Godzilla in this makes him far more menacing, because there seems to be a little bit more, and I'll use the term humanity, in the sense that a conscious being actually staring down at you and knowing full well what it's doing. It's not a lizard that's sort of not sure what's going on around it.
Yeah.
He knows exactly what he's trying to do.
Yeah, he's completely alert. Yeah.
And that made it even more menacing, was that expressive face that they put into it now.
Too.
It was the eyes for me. Yeah.
Yeah, he moved in sort of a that's typical kind of slow monster movie, but like he's eating, biting into trains, and then when he does the heat ray, it's not this sort of just breathing a ray, a beam at things. This is like detonating a nuclear warhead.
Yeah,
which was a very impressive sequence. That sequence was like deeply horrifying, and then this like horrible black tar rain starts falling. It was just like, oh my god.
Yeah, it was really spectacular. Visually, the creature design was wonderful, and so were all the set pieces and the costuming. It was such a visual feast as much as it was a good story being told.
Yeah, and if I was to put a little criticism in there, you did note some of the CGI was not crash hot. Not so much with Godzilla, but they obviously used a lot in the peripherals, and that sort of was a bit noticeable for me. But, I mean, really, I was being carried along too much to really go, nope, that's it.
I can kind of forgive that in a way with all these sort of more, I guess, classic monster movies. It doesn't quite look perfect all the time. So I don't mind that so much.
I think also you're dealing with, like post-production budgets as well. Like some teams I don't mean to keep, like, beating certain movies up, but certain Marvel and DC properties of late with their glorious $300 million. This was made for less than $15 million.
Oh, and it's superior to them.
Yeah. The worst CGI, and this looks better than The Flash.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a tiny, tiny criticism, but that was the only thing that I could say. If I had to find a flaw, that was it. Otherwise I couldn't find a flaw, and it's probably one of the best films I've seen this year.
Yeah, no, sincerely. I've struggled to get to the movies this year a lot, probably financially, because it costs an arm and a leg to go to the movies now. I've seen this twice. I needed to go see it again.
Yeah. I don't think I've been to the cinema since we reviewed The Batman. So it has been quite a while, because nothing had sort of whetted my appetite to go and sit down in a theater and watch a movie. Not even Barbie could convince me. But when you mentioned Godzilla, I was like, yeah, all right, I'll go see it.
we did see Godzilla versus Kong, didn't we?
We did.
Back in the day.
And that's out next year. Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, which dropped a trailer around the time this released. And we have the Monarch show. So it is a very, very good time to be a Godzilla fan.
Yeah, I guess also we have a bit of a cliffhanger or a continuation potentially at the end of this film. We have, I guess, the very, very end with some regenerative qualities. Plus, there's also this strange black mark on the back of Noriko's head, Koichi's, I guess, love interest. So I'd be interested to see where it goes if they do decide to continue the story.
I really hope they don't, because like Shin Godzilla ends in a very similar, like, what the fuck kind of way. It has a very weird ending. It's made by the guy who did Evangelion back in the 90s, so it's got a very very strange, eerie, weird ending, but they never made a sequel to it. So I kind of like these little, like, ooh, and then you just don't, you know, they don't need to make another one. It's okay.
I'd say if this is successful as I believe it will be, they'll be making another one.
I wouldn't be mad if they did.
I will see it. The director has made it very clear all he wants is to make a Star Wars film, so.
Oh, okay.
And $60 million worldwide at the moment, which is fantastic.
How much was it?
Less than 15 mil.
I'd say it's still going to make a bit more. It's only being stifled by the cinema releases in terms of.
Well, it got the limited release. It got a very limited release initially in the States, and then that's increased to 2,500 screens, and then got bumped up again to, I think, around either 2,600 or 2,800 screens. So, I mean, it's growing.
I think that also speaks largely to the appetite there is for different kinds of films. We have a foreign language film as a blockbuster, and it's doing incredibly well. And I guess it's down to audiences wanting new things that are also somehow just familiar enough for them to go and see it. So I'm happy that there's so much success with this film.
Well, I don't remember if this is on record or we were just what we were talking about between recordings, what Jason said about, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy doing very well. And it is a matter of, like, word of mouth is still important and still works.
Oh, hugely.
If a film is good, people tell people and people go see it. And if a film is not good, say the Marvels being pulled from screens early in some cases. So I think it's a great thing that people are getting excited about it and are telling people, and people I know have been like, oh, I heard it was good, so I went and saw it. Like, my mother went and saw it. Like,
did she like it?
She loved it.
Admittedly, I didn't even know this film was happening until, Scott, you mentioned it a few weeks ago. And I'm so happy that you did.
I'll tell anybody about Godzilla.
I know you will.
The Pentecostal Church of my God, Zilla.
You're listening to this and you haven't seen it, I'd say try and catch it while it's still in that limited release and find a cinema somewhere close to you that actually is showing it.
Yeah, it's so much fun to see it on a really big screen. You know, don't wait till it's on the television. Go see it at a theatre.
No, it's a big old monster movie that deserves to be seen on the big screen.
Yeah.
Cool. Godzilla minus one. I have nothing else to say. I'm just really happy to be here, guys. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Popped Culture. I've been Scott.
I'm still Jason.
And I'm still Monica.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Popped Culture. You can follow us on Twitter, or X rather, at PCulturePod, and you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/PoppedCulturePod. Thank you guys for listening, and please, if you're feeling generous, leave us a review on wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.